Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT for December 5th, 2023, the go-home show for NXT Deadline. NXT Deadline, it's coming up on Saturday, and they said it quite a bit tonight. So my God, I don't know how many times they said it. I should have kept the tally, but NXT Deadline this Saturday in Connecticut. It's a little too far for me to travel. I was thinking about it, but I'm not going to do it. And with me to talk NXT tonight is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey, everybody. Bruce Hazelwood. My report for tonight's go-home show is about the torture of the BFC side. And one of the things that I did know in my final thoughts was just how many times they either said deadline or Saturday or some combination of the two tonight, just to make sure you remember that there's something going on this Saturday night. And to be fair, I forgot that we had an event this Saturday in the PLE until it was mentioned in our group chat this morning. So reminders, I guess, were needed, but man, with that many, I'm not sure if it was bordering on being a little too much. I started to get a little annoyed toward the end, but
yeah,
in terms of a go home show, I think they had a good balance of getting you hyped and furthering what's going to happen on Saturday, but also reminding you of the things that are in play for after the show and moving forward into Stand and Deliver build.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good show overall tonight. Well, obviously, we'll get into it. That's what we're here to do. But there's a couple things that were like annoyed me a little bit, like both groups for the Iron Survivor Challenge, like fighting their way out from the back and interrupting things. But you know, whatever. Other than that, what? Rather than just talk about random things, let's get into it proper. So we had a main event match, main event segment after the match. Let's talk about the segment first. That segment was Ilya Dragunov and Baron Corbin in a bit of a, I don't even know if it was a contract signing or if it was more of just a face.
It was a face off.
Yeah, was there even a contract on the table? I don't remember seeing
it. No, it was advertised as a face off.
Okay. All right. So. Cool. But yeah, essentially we had Ilya Dragunov, Baron Corbin. They're going to be assuming in the main event for NXT Deadline. At least Ilya Dragunov's putting his NXT title on the line. We'll see if it winds up in the main event or not. But they came out here for a bit of a face-off. I thought this was a pretty good segment and kind of got you a little bit more hyped for this match. I mean, I don't want to say I'm not a Baron Corbin fan because, like, I respect Baron Corbin. I think he's a good worker. He's going to go out there. He's going to give you a good match and whatever. But he's not, like, somebody I get super, super excited about. Where I think he's a good first opponent for Ilya Dragunov, especially, size difference and all of that, I think it's a good kind of, like, I think he's a good hurdle for Ilya Dragunov to have to climb for his first title defense. I'm not like super jazzed about the match because it's Baron Corbin, like whatever. I mean, it should be a good match. It should be fun. But it's not like something I'm super, super looking forward to. I thought they did a pretty good job here tonight, you know, hyping it up. Baron Corbin almost looked like he kind of like unleashed the dragon, I guess is a good way to put it. Kind of realized that he may have unleashed said dragon. He basically came off like, well, this entire feud came off like he's not afraid of Ilya Dragunov. And then Ilya Dragunov kind of, it was weird. He almost like, he snapped and like embraced Baron Corbin in this weird almost hug. Like I thought he was going to give him like a belly to belly or something, but no, kind of like embraced him in this hug. And you know, he said something to the effect of the only one that can kill the dragon is the dragon himself or something like that. The look in Baron Corbin's eyes, there was like, oh crap, what did I just do? I just unleashed the beast. I thought it was a very effective segment and, it's making me look a little bit more forward to the match. But again, I'm looking more forward to the Iron Survivor Challenge matches than I am anything else on the card, I think. Bruce, let me throw it over to you for the main event segment and then we'll get into main event match.
I liked about 80% of this segment. Most of the what I didn't like about it had to do with Dragunov. You know, I know he's intense. I know it's his character. So it does fit. But I think there are just times when he was bordering on too much, especially when he just threw aside the table. And that part in particular, I found to be a bit more comedic than they were probably intending. You know, overall, though, I did like the arc to what this main event segment was portraying with Corbin out there. Thinking more over since I've had some time after writing the report, the only question I do have is, I don't think there was ever any stipulation, any ultimatum given by Shawn Michaels that said if Ilya Dragunov attacks Baron Corbin before their match on Sunday, that he would be stripped of the title or something. So I'm kind of wondering why Corbin was trying to goad him so much into attacking him. Actually attacking him, but pretty fiercely. That aside, Corbin being the one to stand there, and really he's the first one to not really to flinch or be intimidated by Dragunov's intensity. And as you said, you know, he can stand there and he knows he can do it because he's a bad man. He's Golden Gloves champion. He's been there, as you said, 8 years, constantly on TV through ups and downs. He didn't bring up his gimmick changes, but those were the big ups and big downs, really, were, you know, constant Corbin and the like. So he kind of reminded everybody, I guess to a certain extent, why he's deserving of being in this spot. And at the end, at first I thought Dragunov was putting Corbin in a standing head arm choke, or what I think Taz called a jujigatame. I think that's what it's called in judo. But then he was able to hone in that energy and basically turn the tables on Corbin, saying, as you said, the only one who can, you know, kill or beat the dragon is the dragon himself. And I think Corbin, I wrote in my notes at that point, realized that he was trying to unleash something, but he may have unleashed a little too much, and that might be his undoing on Saturday. Now, I don't think Corbin's going to win. I'd be surprised if he did walk out with the title, but I do have a bit more intrigue as to how this match will go down because of how this feud has been built so personally and intensely around the lack of for Dragunov's family with him and Corbin seemingly having all he can desire. So if this match starts out with the collar and elbow tie-up, then this match will get a 0 stars from me. Like, it had with the intensity that was shown tonight, with the story involved and the family, it has to just, Dragunov, I don't think, can wait for the bell. I think he's going to have to just go out there and just start attacking Corbin right away. Or, you know, if Dragunov is the first one to enter the match, it's probably going to be a giveaway that Corbin's going to attack him from behind. So I just don't think that this can be any of those traditional matches. You have to have Dragunov start off intensely and go right after Corbin. No nothing besides just trying to beat the hell out of him.
You know, I don't disagree. I like that. I hadn't thought about it, but I kind of agree with you there. I mean,
think
everything
of it like Triple H and Shawn Michaels in 2002 going into their Three Stages of Hell match or anything.
Yeah,
everything was just like, all right, calling up the title, let's go. You know, instead of just trying to beat the hell out of each other. Maybe that Three Stages of Hell match started out that way because of having to have three matches, but their feud in general, it's not like that, right? So, to me, you just have to channel the intensity of the feud, and that has to be told in the ring as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think it would be a very logical way for them to kind of kick that off. You know, Dragunov has been... he has that intensity anyway, but we saw a little bit over the top, but whatever, it works, I guess. But we, you know, certainly saw that tonight. But I think that would make sense, you know, if he was to, you know, attack beforehand, or because there's part of me, and I guess it's maybe just the wrestling, I would say wrestling purist or whatever, but like, I do like the fact that, you know, right before a title match, you almost like show respect to the belt and, you know, during the, you know, the announcements in the ring and, you know, having the ref hold the belt up and, you know, all that, a little bit of a ceremony, whatever. I like that. I dig that. And I kind of like don't want to not see that on a PLE you know, for the, you know, where the title is like on the line, because like, I don't know, for me, that's like an important thing. It's weird because especially where it's not like something they've done, well, they've done it for a while, but it's not like something they've done for years and years. But even if they just go through that and then is, you know, right before the bell, Ilya Dragunov just runs across the ring, tries to go for, you know, Torpedo White.
Torpedo Moscow.
Thank you. Torpedo Moscow. You know, something like that, you know, would certainly work too. But I agree. I think it needs to start with some intensity for sure.
Well, and here's the other thing too, and Trick might have given it away, but this is not going to be the main event. And so all that pomp and circumstance might not be necessary for this title match because he said, Melo starts the show, Trick ends the show, right? So that to me insinuates that the Men's Iron Survivor Challenge is going to end the show on Saturday night. And Melo versus King is going to open the show. So whereas I thought they'd have the Women's Iron Survivor Challenge open the show, it looks like that's going to be the show opener and then probably go into the women's match and then maybe Roxanne Perez. We'll get into the rest, but yeah, I think since it won't be the main event, it'll probably be the penultimate match. That being second to last makes it more possible to have some kind of start where they attack each other or they start a brawl, and then the bell rings when they enter the ring. If it was the main event, then I think you would go with the plan that you had, but it's not going to be the main event if Trick's words hold true.
No, fair. All right, so let's. I was going to say, let's go to the phone line. We've got a few people on. Got a few people listening. Nobody wants to talk to us tonight, though. If you do want to talk to us in a future show, 515-605-9345. You can call us approximately a half an hour after NXT goes off the air. We try to be. I like to try and start the show at 10:30 Eastern if we can. You could also email us pwtorchnxt@gmail.com and be a part of the show that way too. So let me I was trying to multitask and I ended up running out of time before I got to the mailbag. I wanted to see if we had anything in there, and we do. So before we go to the main event, let's go to an email from Brian Alston. Brian says, hello, friends. I'm sure you opened the podcast talking about the release of Mackenzie Mitchell, which we didn't, and that's a shame. We should have. Similar to you, I'm saddened by these events. No questions this week, but don't forget to listen to Saturday's exclusive VIP, Torch VIP podcast, NXT 8 years back. Kelly and Tom Stope discussed the December 9th, 2015 edition of NXT. Enzo Amore and Big Cass have a serious promo. Oh, I'm sure Kelly's looking forward to that. They also answer a movie question with the actress who plays President Alma Coyne. Thanks, Brian Alston. Thank you very much, Brian. So he doesn't have a question, but yes, Mackenzie Mitchell's gone, and that's awful. Kelly Kincaid, I mean, you know Mackenzie Mitchell. You're all right. It's fine. But, man, Mackenzie was like, I thought she was killing it backstage. You know, she had her own personality. She would kind of, you know, get into it with some of the wrestlers and interact with them. You know, and I don't know if that was like, you know, a her thing or if that was something that, you know, they obviously, you know, scripted or whatever. Obviously it was scripted, but I don't know if it was something that she wanted to do or what have you, but cause it's not something that we see NXT, or WWE, like backstage interviewers do very often. They, you know, they try to just kind of be a fly on the wall, if you will. But you know, Mackenzie Mitchell, I mean, like Kathy Kelly, I felt like, you know, they were kind of like, she was kind of on the same level as Kathy Kelly. And, it's kind of a shame to see her released. I don't know any more about what happened there or anything. But Bruce, let me throw it over you for Mackenzie Mitchell.
I also have not looked into why she was released or what happened, if it was something that she requested, if it was something that she caused, if it was just what they wanted. But I actually started off my report about this, and let me just read what I wrote. So Mackenzie Mitchell was released last week, and I cannot stress to you enough, dear reader, how big of a loss this is for NXT. Mitchell was absolutely fantastic in her role, an interviewer with relatable and believable reactions who asked relevant questions, which isn't always the case with professional wrestling announcers / interviewers. If Vic Joseph seems stolen tonight, this is why. He actually didn't seem any different. I assume Kelly Kincaid takes over the role now, And when I started my report, I had question mark up there as the correspondent. And I was right, with Alicia remaining the ring announcer, and that was also right. But essentially, you know, I kind of joked that the high five with Wesley last week was the last straw, but she had these on-screen relationships in terms of the chemistry with certain people on the roster. With Wesley, is always one of friendship, supporting each other. Corbin, Breaker as heel, is always just dismissing her, not really giving her time of day, something of metaphor. I mean, you just go through the people throughout the time that she's been there and the chemistry she's had with all of them. And it's not something you always get. And again, it's not like she was asking those dumb questions you might hear, like, oh, what did you think about this play call? I'm like, well, okay. You know, she asked more relevant questions, and she called heels on the BS and things like that. So I think it's a big loss, because I'm not exaggerating when I say she was one of the best things about NXT, especially since 2.0, is that you can always rely on her to be a fantastic interviewer, to be consistent, to be reliable. And, you know, Kelly Kincaid, she was, from what I remember as Quinn McKay, and I believe she was Quinn McKay in ROH, you know, good, what I've seen of her on NXT. I haven't seen enough of her yet to have something to latch on to in terms of the personality, in terms of her character. So she's getting that time now. And tonight she was there, but she didn't get to say and do too much. So I'm going to give a couple of months. But it's just really big shoes to fill in terms of Mackenzie Mitchell and just the things that she brought to this show. So, yeah, big loss. And I know that Kelly also feels the same way. And while he's not here,
yep.
he definitely echoes our thoughts regarding the loss of Mackenzie Mitchell.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know we talked about it in our X chat. It still doesn't feel right to call Twitter X, but we got our little group chat. We're talking about it. Yeah, Kelly's right there with us. Kelly's right there with us. It's sad. It's definitely sad to see her go. I was just doing some quick googling while you were talking there, and I don't see. I'm still seeing like everything, you know, saying that she was released, you know, from 4 days ago, the news she was released, but I don't see any like real reason. So I don't know if that's actually out there yet into the world, but yeah, certainly a shame, certainly a shame. Let's go to our next email here. And it's from Azan White. Azan says, hello, NXT gang. He's got three questions for us. He says, one, what do you think about Kelly Kincaid's interview work tonight? Will she fill Mackenzie's shoes? I feel like that's a fitting question. I didn't even read this email beforehand, so I almost made it look like I planned that.
Not said anything and made it look like you planned it.
I could have, but hey, I should have. While it's unfortunate what happened to Wesley, it seems like the plan was to have a major match between Dragon Lee and Dominic with Ray at ringside before Dragon was called to SmackDown. If Dragon Lee wins the belt, do you see a quick title change next week on NXT like they did with Trick Williams? And what do you think about Ava's new role as HBK's assistant matchmaker, from Azan in St. Louis? So Kelly Kincaid, as you're just saying, she's not Mackenzie Mitchell. She's okay. I don't think she did a poor job. But I'll be honest, I barely remember her tonight in any segments. Like I know I watched her in a couple segments tonight, but she also didn't stand out in my brain either. So I don't necessarily know what that says, because I think that's what NXT or WWE as a whole wants for their interviewers. But as we just said, Mackenzie made herself more relevant and actually added to the show. So I don't know. I don't know if Kelly Kincaid kind of blending in tonight was a good thing or a bad thing, but I can't say anything bad. Let's put it that way. With Bruce Lee, you're Bruce Lee with Wesley. It sucks. Like and it's weird because I almost felt like it was storyline at first when they were talking about this with Wesley. you know, West, and I guess we could talk about it a little bit here, but Wes Lee came out and gave a, you know, an in-ring promo tonight, essentially saying that, you know, he's going to be out of action. You know, needs to go get back surgery. You know, they said later on commentary it could be 8 to 12 months that he's going to be out. But originally at first, like, before that segment, he was walking to the ring, and then they cut the commercial and then he came out to the ring. But when he was walking to the ring, like Vic Joseph on commentary was like, what's this? I didn't know about this. And as he sees Wes Lee, like hobbling on a crutch. I kind of took that as this is story at first. And then they're talking about back surgery, being out 8 to 12 months. I'm like, that's not, I don't know if you're going to talk about being out in a story. I mean, Von Wagner just had his head crushed and he was out for like 4 weeks. You know, so I it sounds like it might be legit, and that sucks. I really hope it's a quick and easy recovery. I mean, I'm sure it probably won't be for back surgery, but I hope it's as easy as it possibly can be for him. And, you know, and we'll go from there. But Dragon Lee coming back down to NXT and challenging for the North American title with Rey Mysterio in his corner. Yeah, I mean, we were kind of all set for doing that. You know, we've had Rey Mysterio come down. Was he in Dragon Lee's corner before?
Yeah.
He was in somebody. Okay, that's what I thought. So yeah, we've seen it happen in the past. I dig it. You know, it's Rey Mysterio showing up on NXT. He might not even be wrestling, but it's fine. It's a legend like Rey Mysterio in NXT. I'm going to take it. I'll take it. I'm cool with that. Plus Dragon Lee, I mean, phenomenal talent. Never, you know, didn't end up winning the NXT North American Championship. It'd be kind of cool to see him win it. By the same token, it'd be another main event or main roster superstar winning an NXT title. So, I don't know. I'm like, that's the one thing that I'm kind of like, why can't we have another NXT guy in here? But whatever, kind of is what it is there, I guess. But I'm really looking forward to this match, actually. Dominic, you know, while he's not the greatest in the ring, he's certainly gotten a hell of a lot better than he did, you know, he was when he was teaming with his dad. But I mean, he's just so much fun to watch. I love watching Dominic, the way that the crowd just absolutely craps on him the entire time he's out there. I was thinking about this tonight when he was out, you know, when he came out later in the segment with Wes Lee. I thought it was crazy. Like, I'm thinking about it and I'm like, little Dominic Mysterio from way back in the day who didn't know who his real daddy was. And now he's one of the biggest heels in the company. It's like, who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it? I don't necessarily think it's going to be a Dragon Lee victory. And then his third question about, Ava as her new role as HBK's assistant matchmaker. I mean, I don't dislike it. I don't know if I have an opinion on it yet. You know, this is the second week we've kind of seen her in this type of a role. My dog Corbin, not Baron Corbin, but Corbin is dreaming across the room, and I was like, "What the hell is all that noise?" Yeah, I don't know if I have an opinion on Ava's new role yet. I don't dislike it, but we kind of need a bit of an explanation as to why she's putting herself in this role or has been put in this role. You know, she went from being a member of Schism. There really wasn't.
We actually have that.
Wait, they have what?
There's an explanation for her.
What's the explanation? What'd I miss?
So this was maybe a month ago. I remember ref Daryl Sharma was giving an interview and he said, I just got out of Shawn Michaels' office, and because of the nature of the feud between Eddie Thorpe and Dijak, it's a referee discretion match. And as he was speaking, behind him, Ava walked into Shawn Michaels' office. So that was the first hint something new was happening. Remember now?
I remember that.
That was the first hint that something was happening the first time that we saw something different happening with her was when they showed Paul Heyman speaking with her. And then they also showed her in the back being spoken to by, Becky Lynch? These were all in the background of another backstage segment. So kind of like what they're doing with
Dante Chen and
Boa. Exactly. Boa. That's what they were doing with with Ava and Shawn Michaels. So to me, they do have that explanation, although, like you know, it was subtle. So if you missed it, you missed it, which is understandable. But then, so they do have that explanation. That's what I just wanted to add.
No, thank you, because I forgot about that. I'm glad you brought it up. So okay, I guess we have a bit of an explanation then. So I guess I still have to try to form an opinion on it, but I don't hate it. I don't know what it's necessarily going to do for her, but I mean, she still needs some protection right now. I mean, she's not, we haven't seen her in action in a while, but I mean, she's certainly not her father in the ring.
And her dad wasn't the greatest worker to begin with.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. He was an amazing, he still is an amazing entertainer. But he was never the best, you know, in-ring worker. I mean, same thing with John Cena, for that matter. You know, Cena himself will say he's an absolute klutz. So, you know, there's that. But yeah, so she still needs to be protected. So putting her in a role like this where, you know, she's kind of, I guess, in like an assistant admin type of a role or something, I guess kind of works. And I mean, they could certainly build into that into feuds where, you know, somebody gets pissed off that she's, you know, making decisions or sticking her nose where it doesn't belong or what have you. So, you know, I'm okay with it. I don't know where they're going to go with it. And I'm hoping that it leads to something good for her, but I'm not sure what that necessarily is. I talked a heck of a lot longer about this email than I thought I was going to. So let me throw it back to you on this email, the three questions. If you need me to repeat them, let me know.
I'll go with Ava first since we're touching on that. And, you know, she, like you said, she needs not just protection, but she needs more time on the mic, on everything, character development. So I don't mind this at all. It also, the good news, at least thus far, is after one night, she doesn't seem like she's going to be a heel. It seems more like she's going to just try and be a peacekeeper, more or less, and try and keep things running smoothly for Shawn Michaels, and at this point, I really don't need to see Shawn Michaels on my TV screen, even just to announce things or be in some segments. So I think having a proxy for him is actually a good idea. And the thing with other people on the roster is depending on the person, you probably have larger plans for them, and or they might be at a point in the development where right now being Shawn Michaels' proxy wouldn't be good for them. With Ava, you theoretically know she has potential, know her family background, and think that she's going to be around for a while. So give her the time to build up a character. And we've seen people be more manager or assistant or those kind of types before becoming successful wrestlers in the past before. So it's not like it hasn't been done before. And she was floundering with Schism. I think the biggest challenge for her, you know, aside from learning the in-ring stuff, of course, because that's everyone's challenge, is going to be, you know, she tried to be intense tonight, but I'm not sure how much her charisma is going to come through. It's not like, again, The Rock at first didn't have all that charisma either. So if she just follows in her dad's footsteps, then eventually that charisma will probably come out in a different way once she finds something that's more, not to say more herself, but something she's more comfortable doing. And I'm not sure if Schism was something that she was comfortable doing. So I'm looking forward to the continued evolution of Ava and her presence on screen. And hopefully this role is what gives her that comfortability factor that leads her to being someone that NXT can build around in the future rather than being a role player. Because I don't think they envision her being a role player on the show in the future.
His other question was on Wes Lee.
I want to hit that one last, and I think the second one was on Dragon Lee.
It was part of this question was on Wes Lee, Dragon Lee, and then his other question was on Kelly Kincaid, which we kind
right,
of
and,
touched
you know,
on.
I kind of touched on, so I'll just go to the Dragon Lee thing first and then hit on Wes Lee at the end. So Dragon Lee, I think on short notice, this is probably the best matchup he could have made, simply for the fact that these two have had a very recent rivalry with each other. I think it was over the last part of the summer, and one that Dragon Lee did not come out victorious, obviously, because he didn't have the title. So I think having that history right there makes it easy for you to build a video package for Saturday, and also for people who have been watching NXT. So for those who haven't been watching NXT, you get a video package on Saturday showing their history, and like, oh, okay, so these two know each other. There's a history there. There's a story there. Okay, but then for those of us who have been watching, it's a nice callback because, as you said, not only was Mysterio supposed to be in his corner for a certain match like this, but that was very recent. Because Dragon Lee's only been on Raw, what, 2 months? 3 months, maybe?
Yeah,
tops.
I mean, to be completely honest with you, like, I kind of forgot he got called up to main roster, and I thought he was, like, coming back from just, like, some time off TV. But, yeah, it seems like it's been, like, 3 weeks he's been gone.
Yeah, so a part of that probably had to do with the Rey Mysterio injury angle, the leg. But, you know, I think, again, we've seen short-term replacement matches that were a lot more questionable than this. So I applaud them for the path they took here. And again, you also have the connection with the father, Mysterio, being there, which, since they're also associated with each other on Raw, it not only adds to the credence of Dragon Lee being there, but then you have the family angle between Dominic and Rey, which probably will be extended. If Dragon Lee does win on Saturday. So the only match that I'm certain of on Saturday is Blair Davenport winning the Women's Iron Survivor Challenge. Every other match, I'm really not 100% sure on. Even Corbin and Dragunov, I'm more 80-20 Dragunov, whereas I'm 100% certain that Blair Davenport's going to win on Saturday. So all these matches to me are really toss-ups, and it's probably just going to come down to day of, maybe, honestly. So if he does win, I have a feeling that what's going to happen is they're going to continue the feud between Dominic and Rey and move that to Raw, while Dragon Lee, if he does win, will then have a brief detour in NXT while probably pulling double duty just like Dominic Mysterio. And again, you know, you made the comment earlier that it's another main roster person with the title. At least with Dragon Lee, it's someone who was very, very recently in NXT. And I think that at least helps in that regard a little bit, because he does have that connection with the fans still. And, so to Wesley. At first, when they showed him in the back, I thought, oh, here's another injury angle with Wes. Because, you know, it was so sudden and everything. But then the moment I realized it was legit is when they hit the ring and that look on his face. That wasn't the look of him going out to trying to give an intense promo to further a feud or anything. To me, that was him going out there and coming to terms with the fact that he almost had to retire, essentially, because of not being able to feel his legs, as he said, and the pain that he was in just standing there. And Booker T, I think, said he had sciatica, he's suffering from sciatica. So that's definitely not fun or good. And for Wes Lee, to me, especially once the tears started streaming, you knew that it was legit. And I don't know what it's like to suffer from sciatica. I can't say that I know anyone who's had that either, but any sort of back injury is definitely going to be painful and hurt and and difficult to recover from. So I just hope that, you know, even in his MSK days, going back to when he was in Impact, TNA, now I've always been a fan of his, when he was with the Rascals and when he came over. You know, MSK as a tag team, really because of a certain few people, didn't get over as much. But his whole singles run from the very beginning, I was all for, because I just knew he had the potential. And then the promos he was giving, the matches he was delivering, all just built up to where he became somehow a fan favorite after all those those months of being booed just for being associated with NASCAR or just because of the gimmick. So it, to me, that kind of a journey is one reason I love developmental, but it also just shows, you know, how much things can change with, one, a character that isn't so goofy, and two, just putting in good performance after good performance. His mic work in the beginning, we know, was not great, but he kept working, he kept improving, and I think the fans saw that, and they grew to love him as basically he's basically going to be a babyface for his entire singles career is what I see, you know. And so I really just hope he comes back healthy and he's able to continue. And we've seen these sort of catastrophic career-threatening injuries in NXT before. You know, your man Tommaso Ciampa went through something like that with his neck, and we weren't sure if he would be able to come back. And, I mean, luckily he did. But with the back injury, too, you're just never sure. So, you know, here's the best to Wesley. Hoping he comes back. 8 to 12 months is a long time. So most likely we see him end of summer, early fall next year, which is going to be a long time. But when he does come back, I'm sure we'll be ready and excited to have him back in the fold.
I can tell you from experience, back injuries are not fun. I had one when I was 16. We went through a lot of PT and stuff. And I remember at 17 years old bending down to tie my shoe and then not being able to stand up straight for about a month. Yeah, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. So I wouldn't wish a back injury on like my worst enemy. I mean, it's debilitating. So, you know, Wesley, fingers crossed for you, man. I want to see, you know, want to see him come out of this and come out good and stronger than ever. Like you said, I mean, his promo work, I really want to point this out. His promo work has come like light years from where it was, you know, back when he was part of MSK and just starting a single run. It was a very heartfelt promo. As you said, you know, he teared up and that's exactly the point. I knew it was real. Was when he started tearing up. I think he's absolutely incredible on the mic now. It's certainly a testament to him, and honing his craft, not just in the ring, but I mean, everything about what you need to do to be a wrestler and kind of honing that it factor that, you know, we talk about so often. Let's keep our fingers crossed for him. And now let us go over to the phone lines where Brad has been patiently waiting. Brad, I think you can talk to us. Yes, there we go. Now the switchboard's turned on. Here we go. How's it going tonight?
Hey, Nate. Hey, Bruce. How you guys doing?
Doing good. How about yourself, man?
Good, man. I pressed one when I heard you guys talking about Mackenzie because I loved her, man. I mean, I do not understand how in the world they could let her go. Not just for her own, obviously her performance was great. And I think 99% of the people that watched the show thought she was terrific. But like, I would imagine that the WWE values Vic Joseph a tremendous amount. And, you know, that is his wife.
I don't know why.
And well, I actually tend to think he's pretty good, man. I know a lot of people don't like him. They're hit or miss on him, whatever. But I think he's good. And,
I think it's because we have to cover the show, Kelly and I.
Yeah, but, like, you know, it's his wife. And, like, you would think they would get, like, listen, you know, if we have to let go of one backstage person, is it really going to be the wife of our play-by-play broadcaster? Like, and she's pretty good as is. Like, that would be something I would think about. Like, you have to imagine, like, he's probably not thrilled with that decision that, you know, she's now, you know, not able to work there. And obviously she wanted to. She actually had a very funny tweet to Wesley, who she had incredible chemistry with a couple hours ago. She wrote like, when one of us go down, we all go down. Something like that to Wesley. Like, you know, it was just kind of funny. Like he's out and she's out. And they were always so sort of paired together with the backstage stuff. But I don't know, man, I was disappointed by that, but I'm trying, guys, I've been trying for like months to figure out why NXT, in the way that they present the television product, is just better and more engaging or more intriguing in certain ways than the main roster. Like, I don't know if it's like the way they introduce things backstage or the way they set up feuds backstage. I don't know if it's just because the matches are quicker that I personally like. But I don't know what it is about the product that they seem to be able to make everything interesting. Like, for instance, if I'm watching the main roster and I see, like, even the other night, like Nia Jax versus Shayna Baszler, like, I don't really care that much. But they found a way with the Lyra Valkyria segment with Tatum Paxley kind of being, you know, spying on her, but then like being this weird, creepy, almost stalker friend that made me actually interested in the Tatum Paxley Lola Vice match. Like, they just find a way to make every single thing on their show interesting and something that you want to watch next. And I don't know what the answer is. And I wonder if maybe you guys do. Bruce, I know you don't watch a ton of the main roster, but I don't know. Like, do you guys have an idea, or am I way off base in what I'm talking about? It's just my thoughts, but.
No, I personally don't think you're off base at all. I only tend to watch the main roster live if I'm going to be doing a post show with Wade. Otherwise I'll watch it on DVR. Yeah. I'll either do it on DVR or I'll catch up with highlights or something like that, because I mean, I'm an ADD kid as it is, so, you know, trying to keep my attention is tough in and of itself, but especially at the end of the day after my medication's worn off. But NXT, I'm always engaged in. I think part of it is the fact that it's that smaller, more intimate venue. The crowd scene, and I hate to give them a little credit because I sometimes hate this crowd, but also that crowd is very rowdy. It always has been, and they get where it is a smaller venue. You can see more of the crowd, you know, kind of up close. And each person's reaction in the crowd means a little bit more. So I think that's part of it. Part for me anyway, why it's a little bit more engaging is just kind of that more intimate setting. I know. Like, personally, I would so much rather go to an indie show. I went to an indie show this past weekend where I watched Colt Cabana kick the crap out of a grandmother. It was amazing. It sounds like it was terrible because, you know, kicking the crap out of a grandmother, but it was absolutely hilarious. But I would much rather go to a small, intimate show, something like NXT, than, you know, a much larger show that, you know, you kind of, I don't know, you just kind of feel like a prop, especially for like a Raw or a SmackDown. So I think that, you know, it's partly that, but I also think it's partly how they write the show. I mean, it's I'm assuming two completely different writing teams, or even maybe three completely different writing teams, you know, Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. You know, Shawn Michaels down there in NXT, it's like he's he's a great booker. You know, we've seen that throughout NXT 2.0 and now back to kind of this new black and gold era. So I think it's kind of, you know, the way that they book the show as well. It's they try to make everything meaningful without being, I don't know, over the top and I guess comedic sometimes, like they will on the main roster with certain things. I think they just try to make everything more, like just more, much more meaningful in NXT, if that makes sense. You know, like for example, I mean, think of DIY. I mean, DIY back in NXT years ago. I mean, God, yeah, that feud was absolutely incredible. And now, you know, main roster, they've reunited. Nobody really knows who DIY, like. You know, everybody, the announcers on the main roster, oh, the DIY is reunited, and they give you a little bit of history about their NXT run, but give me more. Give me like this comprehensive video package showcasing their, you know, how they came to be, you know, back in the, what was it? The Cruiserweight Classic, and then, you know, the Dusty Classic, and then their feud against one another. And now they're back together. Like, show me something like that. to get me invested in DIY again, or period, if you're a brand new fan to DIY or, you know, haven't watched NXT in the past, and NXT always does that. They give you a reason to care about each person. They give you a story, whether it be, you know, a backstage, your backstage interview, or, you know, different video vignettes or what have you. They do a better job, I think, of establishing characters in NXT than they do on the main roster.
Nate, I hate to interrupt you.
No,
go ahead.
No, please do. Please do.
Your
go ahead,
point
Brad.
Is, your point is very valid, and I want to hear what Bruce has to say if he wants to, you know, chime in on this. But, like, DIY is the perfect example. Like, I feel like on NXT, they would show them backstage or even in the ring, like, saying how happy they are to be back together, talking about the memories, you know, giving you something where it's like, okay, I get it now. I understand it now. But on the main roster, it's just like, they're together, look. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and then you're just supposed to care about that.
You're just supposed to care, exactly, and you don't. Like, even tonight, man, like, seeing Wesley in the ring, crying, literally crying, unbelievable, like, just incredible stuff. And the way they made it feel like a surprise, you mentioned it earlier, you guys, like, when you said, Vic said, hey, look, did you know anything about this? And then they just went right to commercial, but they just, they incorporated it so well. And he's in the ring. You know what they would have done on the main roster if this was Raw? They would have had Wesley standing backstage with whoever he's in a feud with. They would have had him, showed him getting stomped or laying on the ground, and this despicable person took him out, and then they would have gone back to the ring, you know, for the next match or whatever. They would not have given you what they gave you with Wesley tonight. Sorry to interject there. I just wanted to say that before I forgot. You were such a good point.
No. It, by all means, man, by all means. Bruce, let me throw it over to you for your thoughts.
Well, I think one thing that helps is NXT is not a three-hour show and 5 hours overall. You know,
there's that.
Quote, separate rosters. But one thing you said was they try to make sure that every second is meaningful for the show. It advances the story, it advances character, advances something, right? Even the segments we don't like, they try and do something with them. They try and make sure that whoever's in that segment is trying to put over, get over something. Like tonight, Nikita Lyons came back. Woohoo. They spent 10 seconds on that, but they did enough to make you remember that she's back, and apparently she's going to be a force. And I'm scared that there's going to be some kind of injury angle, and she's going to be added to, she's going to replace somebody on Saturday in the Iron Survivor Challenge match. That aside, for me, I've always liked developmental. I've never... You know, of course I like the product, whether it's WWE, AEW, one, it's the professional level, the highly polished level, the people that are at the top of the game. But I've always been a fan, especially in pro wrestling, more so than watching college sports. I'm not a fan at all of college sports. But when it comes to professional wrestling, I think because of how professional wrestling is laid out and because of the careers of wrestlers, it can be 20, 30, 40 years long, who knows? I like seeing the journeys and the stories that are being told throughout the careers of wrestlers, especially when I'm able to see them from the beginning. And NXT isn't the beginning for a lot of them, but at least when it comes to being at a big stage, NXT is the beginning for many people. Now, think about when Rhea Ripley first came into NXT, and I know Kelly always loves to bring her up. Think about when Bianca Belair first came into NXT. You know, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, Samoa Joe, going back even further, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens. I mean, the fact that we got to see them, I mean, Sami Zayn, no one knew what he looked like, really, because he was under a mask with El Generico for so long, right?
Wait,
so,
whoa.
I mean, El Generico was in Mexico, in orphanages, helping kids.
Yes.
But he never spoke. Right, we didn't even know if he could give promos, and Sami Zayn is one of the best babyface promos in WWE the past decade. Right, so to me, I like seeing these stories play out. I like seeing the development. I like seeing careers progress and going from where they were to what they have become. You know, the Ripley example is really good because she was literally a Charlotte Flair clone, as Kelly says, and she became mommy. She is one of the top two or three, maybe I guess at worst, top five acts on Raw or SmackDown. Right. So,
male or female?
It doesn't matter. Just top five acts on Raw or SmackDown, and then you look at, as you said, people like DIY, and how it hasn't gone as well, or someone like Bronson Reed, where they've had a real up and down tenure, and right now they're having a really good time on I think SmackDown or whatever. I don't pay attention too much, like you two have brought up, but that to me is one reason. And again, every segment to me generally serves a purpose. While I'm not too keen on, you know, the commentary especially, and I think commentary does do a lot in terms of being able to actually get over or detract from a product, right? Sometimes Booker T and Vic Joseph just don't do it for me. And I think in terms of WWE, I think Vic and Booker are the worst tandem. And I have listened to all of them before, including the more recent tandems. It's just that I am not as keen on I think, Booker T and Vic Joseph because I have to listen to them so much. And I'm not sure actually how much Booker T adds beyond his exclamations. I'm like, yeah. I mean, sure, there were points tonight where he definitely did add to it in terms of, you know, the Wesley situation, how much he goes for Roxanne Perez, things like that. But I do think that there are points where NXT does falter. Sometimes they do try to go too comedic. But overall, to me, it is the most, not the most polished product, but I want to say it's the product that is most tightly put together as a show, especially when you compare it to some of the freneticism that you might see on Raw, on Dynamite, or some of the slow pace you might see on Raw. So to me, I think that also has to do with why I feel like NXT just, right now as a product, and for a couple months now I've been making this argument, and I've seen people on Twitter also make the argument, but NXT probably is the best wrestling show in North America, and at least the United States right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. And I don't pay super close attention to AEW, but, I mean, at least from what I've been hearing AEW lately, it's been at least good TV, but I know the ticket sales and things have been down. But anyway, before we get into that rabbit hole, Brad, let me throw it back to you for any follow-up or something else.
Yeah, I don't want to hijack your guys' show, but both of you just painted such a picture for me, and I agree with you, Bruce. Like, it's the best show on wrestling. It's the best wrestling show in the country. It's also, I think it does, to Nate's point, have a lot to do with the Performance Center. Because I think like that whole backstage area with the garage area and the parking lot and it becomes a character in and of itself. Correct. The Performance Center is a character on this show, and it just makes everything flow so seamlessly the way that they do everything. I think.
Well, and not
you know the
that,
main roster.
You need reps, and the Performance Center gives you reps, and if you're not traveling, which, you know, a lot of the AEW shows, they don't, you don't get those reps. And so you're at least being able to get reps day in and day out with the Performance Center, aside from it being a part of the show, is that on a more technical level, they have it there to work every day. Literally every day they can be there and work on their craft.
Correct. And yep. They even used that tonight with the Roxanne, Kiana James thing that they showed from the practice rings. And it was interesting because even that little thing, like you said, Bruce, making everything important, that little thing, just throwing that in there, made you care a little bit more about that table spot at the end. You know, it just, everything worked together seamlessly. To me, the highlights of this show were the table spot with Roxanne and Kiana James. That was great. The Lash Legend slamming Otis. I don't even understand how that happened. And it's not even like she just kind of came off the ropes and just dropped him. Like, she actually legitimately picked him up higher than he was and slammed him. So
that actually got a legitimate holy S out of me. Like,
I said in that segment, Tiffany Stratton might not be the most athletic person in that match. She's a former collegiate basketball player, if I remember correctly, Lash Legend. And maybe professional. Yeah, I think she might have been WNBA, but I can't remember completely.
I think she might have been. Yeah, I don't remember either.
It's funny, though, like how Tiffany was like, I did gymnastics, too. Like, I don't know. There's just they do blend in the right amount of humor with everything, with the right amount of seriousness, with the right amount of viciousness. And I do think it's the writers. Like, I think their writing team is just better. And that – that may come, guys, from, I know, like, NXT posts job positions. I'm a recruiter. I'm a recruiter. I own a recruiting firm. So, like, that's just something I, like, notice. Like, I once in a while look just because I'm curious. And they post a lot of job descriptions for entry-level writers and people that want to – I think these writers are so hungry and so creative at that point in their career, as opposed to the writers who are sitting in the Raw room, you know, and SmackDown every week for hours and hours, and they're going from city to city, and they're doing this and this. Like, I think that those NXT writers just have a better life, and they seem to be a little bit more creative because of it. I don't know if that's, you know, the case, but it's, I think you have a lot more junior writers who have just more youthful, fun ideas sometimes. And I'm not saying old people can't come up with good ideas, because they can, but whatever. I'm just taking over the show, and I'm sorry, but yeah, Last Legend Slam was unbelievable.
Because you brought up the gymnastics thing, is one, when you're doing developmental especially, I think NXT does a fantastic job of finding the base that feels most comfortable for people coming in with Tiffany Strand, Kalani Jordan, obviously with gymnastics, and using that to help them become more comfortable with what they do in the ring. And so I think one of the reasons the development of people like Kalani Jordan, like Tiffany Strand, you can go back to Kurt Angle, why something like that is so pronounced is they channel in on what you already know how to do well and make sure that that's what you start from, so that when you do start learning, you know, Lola Vice is another great example. All the MMA skills that she has, we've seen people from MMA come in and not be able to translate those skills to the ring, but I think she's done a fantastic job with it. And I think that's what the NXT, that the PC and the coaches at the NXT PC do well, is that, well, WWE PC, I guess, not NXT PC, but is they make sure your base is good, and then they work from your base to give you the fundamentals. And from there, they try and develop you into the best that you can be as a wrestler. And with Lash Legend, you know, she's going to be more of a power wrestler. She's not going to be the one flying around, jumping around, doing all that. But her athleticism comes in the fact that she's big, she's strong, she's quick, and she can do things like she did tonight with Otis. Will he come together in the ring for her? I'm not sure. But again, they've at least done what they can with her strength and her base to give her the best shot that they have and she has of becoming a not just a good wrestler, but someone that they can rely on to be, and you know, on the card moving forward. And being a part of Metaphor is definitely a vote of confidence because of how much TV time they do get.
Brilliant point, Bruce, because I, before you said it, I was going to say Lola Vice. Like, look how they cater to her comfort zone of moves. So, yeah, that's a great point. But even a Bron Breakker, like, he's got, like, a football moveset. You know what I mean? It's the spear, yeah, which is, like, basically a tackle. And, you know, they just do such a great job with all that stuff. And I did think at the end, the Corbin promo with Dragunov was great. I thought the hug thing was interesting, and then you had Corbin kind of looking at him like, wow, like, I'm a little scared of this guy now that he hugged me, because it's so crazy, you know? Like, I thought that was really good. But my last question to you guys is, and it does incorporate the main roster a little bit, they're doing a 8-person elimination tournament on SmackDown starting Friday, and they announced 7 people, 1 NXT mystery contestant. I thought we were going to get that tonight. But because Melo lost, do you think that he is going to be that mystery contestant in their NXT or their WWE United States Championship tournament? Or do you think Melo is going to have a big role at this pay-per-view? Because right now he's left out. And I assume something will happen with the trick stuff. But what do you guys think happens with Melo, I guess, is my question.
So I don't know. I got to think about it. I have to think about who I think that mystery person is going to be.
What was the contendership match for again?
The U.S. title.
The United States Championship. Yeah. And they announced one mystery NXT participant.
Yeah. Because, like, I did see that. A few names crossed my mind. Melo was one of them. Breakker was another one. I guess it kind of depends on where they're going to want to go with that. If it's going to be just kind of like a one-off type of a call up, you know, kind of to give some, like, I mean, like they've done with Trick in the past, right? I mean, Mello. Mello's been up on the main roster and had a few matches and stuff, and, you know, it was kind of like a soft call-up. So I guess it depends on if they're going to do something like that or if it's like going to be like an actual legit call-up. I could see it being Mello, but where he's so embroiled with everything with Trick Williams right now, I really think that we're going to get Mello and Trick at Stand and Deliver. I feel like that's where they're building, because we don't have another actual Saturday PLE up until Stand and Deliver, at least on the schedule right now. We may end up, you know, probably have like a New Year's Evil or something on, you know, Wednesday or two Wednesdays in a row, as they've been doing lately with some of these PLEs, like 2 weeks in a row. But I think that's where it's going to go. And then after Stand and Deliver, I think, is where we're going to see Mello finally go to the main roster. I could see him potentially pulling double duty, you know, if it was going to be him kind of, you know, on Friday, tribute to the troops and all of that. But yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be him or not. But at least that's kind of where I see him going, at least in the immediate future, is I think he's going to be sticking around NXT to finish out this story with Trick Williams. And then hopefully for his sake, I would love to see him up on the main roster. You know, selfishly, you want to see him down in NXT, but I think Mello is going to be major money up on the main roster. Bruce.
Since we're on the subject of Mello, he quote tweeted about a half hour ago that video of NXT Anonymous that they showed tonight with him and Trick Miz checking his phone, and he said, "Me, check phone, internet, he's guilty." And so he's really trying to play up the fact that he was just checking his phone, he wasn't texting King, and that he wasn't the one that set up the attack or the one that attacked Trick Williams. But, you know, I've been saying since summer, I think that this is heading to Stand and Deliver between these two. At the time, I was saying for the championship, but as we know, he does not have the title anymore, so they can't be for that unless he somehow gets it back between now and then. But, and I say announced, was it New Year's Eve or the St. Valentine's Day, whatever, as a PLE for Saturday, but I need to double check on that.
I'll double check because, yeah, at least as of 2 weeks ago, when I checked, there wasn't one.
Okay. I think they announced the event. I think it was for a Saturday PLE, but I could be wrong between now and between deadline and Stand and Deliver. So the thing with the mystery person for the SmackDown contendership match, you know, as Nate was saying, it depends. Is it going to be a one-off? Is it going to be, you know, someone that they try to build upon? The thing that makes it difficult right now is that so many people are involved in matches on Saturday that having them in a match on Friday kind of seems, unless you're trying to get more eyes to be on the PLE for Saturday and you have someone like Bron Breakker in there or you have Dijak or somebody that's in the match, the Iron Survivor Challenge specifically on Friday,
well,
in the match on Friday.
Well, Bruce, not to interrupt, but I don't want you to waste your breath because that match would be, they're doing two matches on Friday. One's like Bobby Lashley versus Karrion Kross. I forget exactly what it is, but the NXT person isn't until the following Friday.
All right, then I think it could be Bron Breakker, to be honest. After, I don't think he's going to win on Saturday, even though I'm not sure who's going to win. I don't think it's going to be Bron, and I think it could be their way to move him up, and he could be the one that actually wins the contendership and go to and take the title off of Logan Paul and have his first title reign be one that is the United States Championship run, which, you know, if you're going to bring Bron Breakker in with his pedigree, his background, and then try and capitalize on that and push him strong, but right now you have champions you don't want to take the belt off of in terms of Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, I think making him a secondary title holder is a pretty good idea. And, you know, making him come in just like that and not kind of dally around with, oh, here's a feud with Dolph Ziggler. Oh, here's a feud with Karrion Kross. I think, that was loud. I think something like that would be good for Bron Breakker, not just in the short term, but in the long term, and be good for WWE in terms of setting up the next star for the main event. So if it's not going to be this Friday, then I think it's going to be someone who loses on Saturday, and I think that's going to be a Braun Breaker. And if I had to have a second choice, Tyler Bate.
NXT Vengeance Day, February 4th.
Is that a Saturday?
It's a Sunday.
Sunday. So it was a Sunday, but they did announce it for appealing, just not a Saturday. Gotcha.
Yep. So it will be an actual PLE. Cool. They actually just announced it yesterday, so I don't feel so bad.
Oh, just yesterday. Why did I feel like it was? Okay. Yeah. Cool.
At least according to Wade on the Torch, I'm looking at a thing he wrote yesterday. So, but yeah, cool. Brad, anything else or? Shall we move on?
Thank you guys.
Yeah,
I love you guys.
Problem,
you guys are the best. You guys are the absolute best. And thank you. And can't wait to hear the rest of it. And yeah, have a good evening. Thanks.
All right, man. Hey, and thank you as always, man. Thanks as always. Always good to chat with you. All right, let's keep going here. What else haven't we talked about yet? We haven't talked about the main event match yet tonight. Carmelo Hayes, Tyler Bate, Joe Coffey, Eddie Thorpe, last chance, fatal four-way qualifier for the Iron Survivor match at Deadline. We did wind up seeing Tyler Bate go over here in 11 minutes and 5 seconds, according to Bruce's report here. This I thought was a fun match. I actually really enjoyed this match. A lot of action. We got Eddie Thorpe getting, I think it was a spine buster or something like that onto the steel steps outside, kind of taking him out of the match. Playing up to those taped
the
ribs, as you said. Yeah, you know, which actually was it thrown up?
Yeah, Dallas Irvin threw up the X.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, on the outside, he threw up the X. They're calling him Dallas Irvin now instead of D.A. Brewer. I think Dallas Irvin was his name before, either his shoot name or the name he has before. He gave a WWE, but yeah, he put up the X on the outside. That's why the medics are down there.
Yeah, I noticed the medics and stuff. Yeah, I noticed the medics and stuff. I just thought it was part of the story. Because I hate it when they use the X as part of a story. I feel like that. I don't know.
At least for this one, it looked legit because his ribs. There's been a story about Eddie Thorpe's ribs since the strap match with Dijak.
Yeah,
and that was weeks ago. So at least there's a more legitimate reason for that here.
I can't believe that Von Wagner's head healed faster than Eddie Thorpe's ribs. That's weird. Anyway, but that's beside the point. But yeah, so like I said, you know, a lot of stuff going on here in this match. I'll be honest, I didn't know who was going to win this match. I really didn't think it was going to be Carmelo because stuff going on with Trick. I also didn't necessarily think that it was going to be Joe Coffey either, just for no real reason other than the fact that Gallus just kind of hasn't seemed to have a lot of good luck lately. I was kind of toying with Tyler Bate, but I was really unsure which the other three were going to win this. I dig it. I like it. I think it certainly fits with the other men in the match. And kind of plays off of some stuff going on with Dijak and things like that. So I'm totally fine with Tyler Bate. Actually, I'm always fine with Tyler Bate picking up a win and being part of a match, especially like the Iron Survivor Challenge. I feel like that's a match that's really going to play up to his strength. Kind of similar to the Heritage Cup style matches. Looking forward to that. Bruce, on Tyler Bate's win.
Yeah, I'll probably rope in the other last chance qualifier match too, just because they were
for
similar,
time.
But they also all that, and they also had just enough differences that they stood out in their own ways. So with the men's match, you know, Furious, this was one of those matches, just like with his qualifying match in the first go around, where if it wasn't for the taped up ribs, then this was a perfect chance for Eddie Thorpe to go over, right? But because, again, they're working that story with the ribs, even when he promo with, or his little interview with Kelly Kincaid before he came out for the match, He said, I'm going to win this match because it lets me get at the person who injured my ribs in the first place, and that's Dijak. So I'm assuming that once he does finally heal, whether it's real or kayfabe, that he's going to go after Dijak. And in that case, cool, because I think Eddie Thorpe needs a big victory. And I, you know, again, if it wasn't for the ribs being taped up, he would have been able to – I think it would have been a perfect chance for him to be here. So to me, Bate was probably the most likely outcome because, again, Coffee just – it's more about Gallus as a stable than it is about Coffee as an individual. And then with who am I missing all of a sudden in that last chance qualifier match? It was whatever. Bate just seemed the most obvious. So to me, what I also appreciate about this match is it was about as clean of a finish as you'll find in a Fatal 4-Way match, right? He took out Melo, then he took out
Joe Coffee is the one you couldn't think of.
Joe Coffee. Was Coffee? Yeah. So he took out Hayes, and then he took out Thorpe, or not Thorpe, he took out Coffee with the rebound Larry and the Tyler Driver 97. And so Hayes was protected that he wasn't pinned here, but the match was finished about as clean as you could ask for in terms of this type of match, right? It wasn't someone hit a finisher and they got thrown out of the ring. It was, no, I took care of my opponents, and then I hit a finisher, and then I got my victory. So that was nice. And then the one spot that I thought, oh, no, not again. In the women's match, they had a tower spot in the corner, and I thought they were about to do that here in the men's match, but instead they turned before the tower could happen to try and cut off a Coffee. But what happened instead was their Coffee ducked, and they turned around, Bate and Hayes, and they suffered a top rope crossbody from Eddie Thorpe. So, again, when I talk about quality control, this is what I'm talking about. They knew this segment or this spot happened earlier in the night with the Fatal 4-Way. We don't always see this with NXT where they make the change. But here, they made it just different enough to where, like, oh, okay, I can see you're paying attention. Those are the type of little things that I like to see, you know, become more polished in the product. And I like that they did that here with those two matches. The women's second last chance qualifier, you knew it wasn't going to be Perez or James because their feud basically is a blood feud, and now we have the steel cage match to end it. They didn't need to be in the Iron Survivor Challenge to be on the card on Saturday, obviously. And so, really, Fallon Henley was the correct choice. I believe she was in the match last year, too, but she's shown a lot more character and growth in that department ever since, really, the Halloween episode, where the second one where she was dressed as Tiffany Stratton and did the spot-on impression. But also for months now in the backstage segments with her and Jensen and Briggs, she's the one who's been the most endearing or the most interesting. And while I think the yelling at the end, I mean, she did caveat that by saying she's so pumped up from winning the match earlier in the night. I think it was a bit over the top. She's really come a long way there, and I'm really intrigued to see how much more she progresses and if she has a breakout moment. Or moments in this match. But again, I still think that the women's match is Blair Davenport's to lose.
Blair Davenport's to lose or to win?
I think she's the one to win, so it's hers to lose in terms of in saying that, like...
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right, never mind. Yep, okay. It's getting late over here on the East Coast, man. All right. I agree. I think Blair Davenport's probably the one that's going to wind up walking away, for that Iron Star Challenge. It just kind of feels like it makes the most sense. There's also part of me, and I don't know if maybe I'm just still riding high off of her body slamming Otis tonight, but there's also part of me that just kind of wants to see Lash Legend win, and I can't believe I'm saying that. She's come such a long way in the last year or so. I mean, she's still far from perfect in the ring and whatnot, but her character work is fantastic. As I said earlier, we were talking to Brad, like I'm sitting, well, I wasn't alone in my room. I had Corbin with me, but I'm sitting here alone watching NXT and she body slams Otis. And I quite literally just was like, holy bleep. I'm actually not going to say it. I didn't slip this time. I was shocked, absolutely shocked to see that. So, I think either Otis was trying to be a little giving tonight, you know, or something like that, or they've got some pretty big things in mind for Flash Legend, I think. But I don't think she's going to win. I really don't. But there's kind of part of me right now that's definitely rooting for her. I'll kind of rope in the women's Iron Survivor Challenge segment that we had here tonight. We had all five of the women in that coming into the match with Fallon Henley, Blair Davenport, Tiffany Stratton, Lash Legend, and there's one more. Who am I missing? There's one more.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I'm trying to go through the report real quick to see who I'm missing.
Kalani Jordan.
All right, she's the
who
one.
Probably was the best person in the segment, honestly.
Yeah, she actually did a damn good job in this segment. Especially for the newbie. Across the board, on the mic and the ring and all of that. I think she did a stand-up job here, in this segment. So I apologize, Kalani Jordan, for forgetting you. I also have to say, even I'm a guy, but whatever. I appreciated her makeup tonight. I like the eye stuff she had going on. I think it was a great look for her. But yeah, this I thought this was a pretty cool segment, and I really liked Fallon Henley here. Towards the end of the segment, because they're all as happens in wrestling segments when you get a whole bunch of people in the ring to talk. They of course will start bad mouthing one another and slinging insults and whatnot, and then of course it devolves into a fight. Fallon Henley, right before it devolved into a fight, said something. What's that famous quote? Quiet women don't make history. I can't remember exactly how the quote goes, but that's what she said. And then she screamed "Yeehaw!" and attacked Tiffany Stratton. I thought it was great. I think it fits her character, especially the character development we've seen out of her, where she kind of seems to be taking less and less crap out of people, Briggs and Jensen included. So I dug it. I definitely dug it here. I agree with you. I think, like I said earlier, I think Blair Davenport is probably the one that's going to be walking away from the Iron Survivor Challenge. The build has been fun. Like I said, my one pet peeve with the build so far is the fact that they had both groups of the men and the women fight, like just kind of do this crazy chaotic, a fight where the referees and officials can't break them up, and they go backstage and they fight back out through the curtain and back down to the ring. Both the men and the women did that two different times tonight, once each. It just felt like almost lazy booking, I guess. If you're going to have one of them do it, don't have the other group do it, whatever. Small pet peeve, small, not pet peeve, even nitpick, I guess a better word for that. Small nitpick, but is what it is. Decent segment, building hype for Fire and Survivor Challenge. Do you have anything to add on the segment, or shall we move on?
I wasn't a big fan of this segment. Well, both the talking segments between the Iron Survivor Challenge participants in general, but I will say this. So, when it comes to these two, earlier I talked about how they could have had a tower spot in both matches, but they made sure they didn't. Same thing here. So they started out differently, right? The women were all in the ring with Byron Saxton as an MC to kind of do it, which kind of makes me wonder, like, why don't the men need someone to help them? But they weren't all there at the same time, I guess. And then the men, they all entered individually, right? So we had that as a difference, but also, once the last person spoke for the men, it was Trick Williams. He was the last one to enter, last one to speak. Unlike with the women's segment, which they had them talk a little more just so that they could keep hyping the match, Trick basically went straight to business and just punched Dijak in the mouth and they got to the brawl. So while I'm not the biggest fan that they had the similar types of segments, I will applaud them for at least
mixing it up a bit.
Exactly, not yeah. Having the same exact things happen, right? So I will give them that credit. And then I guess for me, the other thing that I will add about the performances here is, to me, the people that stood out, in different ways, but I think in terms of showing me something and showing either continued growth or something that I haven't seen from them before. You know, Kalani Jordan, she just keeps her on the mic was something that I was concerned about at first, and she's showing that there's really no issue with that. If anything, she might need to rein it in a little bit, kind of like Thea Hale, which is better than having to turn it up a bit, which I think is Ava's problem, right? She's going to have to turn it up a little bit. And then with the men, you know, I think Trick was good. Briggs did surprise me a bit because he spoke to the legitimate critiques that people have of him, not just in kayfabe, but, you know, in general, and that they're they don't expect much out of him. He's being underestimated. Is he just going to be a tag team wrestler? You and I discussed, or all three of us discussed last week, how, you know, he's a former Evolve champion, so he does have a singles pedigree. But what's going to happen? And is he going to be this year's Axiom, where he has his breakout moments but doesn't win the match? And, you know, last year, definitely the people that had the breakouts were Axiom and Kiana James. The issue, of course, though, is that NXT didn't really capitalize on the momentum that they built off of, or that was built off of those two performances moving forward. And we're seeing a bit more of them now, but again, this match was last December, so they had more time to actually build. So having a breakout moment in the Iron Survivor Challenge isn't a guarantee that you're going to be, you know, pushed to the moon, but I think someone like Briggs, with his size, his pedigree, and if he does have a breakout performance, could be someone that we talk about as a men's NXT championship contender for 2024. And the other thing we have to consider and think about for the Women's Iron Survivor Challenge is Lola Vice still has that breakout contract, which gives her a title match of any kind when she wants within a year. So they hinted at that tonight, whether it's going to be a tag team title match, whether it's going to be Lyra Valkyria's title, or whoever wins, whoever ends up defeating her. So there's always that in the background too. And depending on how quickly they want to move to that, that could color how the match ends on Sunday. Because I think, you know, especially with Lyra Valkyria being such a good a face, Blair Davenport's the obvious person. However, if you want Vice to cash in that soon and her to take the title off Valkyria, you might have someone like Fallon Henley get the unexpected victory and have a TV face-versus-face respect kind of match and go from there. So I think that Lola Vice issue is always something to not contend with, but to keep in the back of your mind, because it could play a role in Saturday's match, but I think there is a longer play with that. I just bring it up again because she brought it up tonight with Electra Lopez in that segment before she had her match with Tatum Paxley.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I completely forgot all about it before she brought it up. You know, but I mean, it's essentially a Money in the Bank contract. So, you know, yeah, we'll see. We'll see where that goes. And but yeah, definitely could throw a monkey wrench into things if she decides to like cash it in. Well, I wouldn't say she'd cash it in at deadline because there's fighting. But
well, that,
yeah,
like, yeah,
yeah. So she, you know, might be something after deadline, maybe for like Vengeance Day or something like that. Or maybe she holds on to it and she uses it as some sort of a, you know, character, gimmick. Use it kind of as like her gimmick, like Carmella did for however long. I mean, it seemed like it was like,
for a year.
Yeah, it was like a year, I think, almost a year that she had that briefcase. Cool. All right. Let's keep going here, 'cause there's a lot we haven't talked about and it's already almost midnight. Let's talk about what haven't we talked about yet? We'll talk about the six-man tag, Metaphor versus Alpha Academy.
Person tag.
Our yes, you're right. Six-person tag. My bad. 2023. Metaphor. So Noam Dar Romenza, Lash Legend, versus Chad Gable Otis and Maxxine Dupree. I don't know. I don't know if there's a whole heck of a lot to really talk about in this match other than that body slam by Otis, on Otis by Lash Legend. It was a fun match, but kind of continuing their feud, but I'm not really super, super invested in the feud. I love Metaphor. Alpha Academy, I really wish they'd do more with Chad Gable than kind of just keep him as a comedic act. I feel like he could be, I don't want to say Kurt Angle. Like, I don't want to say he could be another Kurt Angle, but I think he could certainly do more.
Kurt Angle did the comedic stuff, too?
Yeah, no, he did. But when he did the comedic stuff, he was still in the main event or, you know, considered a main event act, main event type guy, where, you know, Chad Gable never has. And I don't know. I feel like there's so much more that Chad Gable could do, and then he's kind of stymied in the role that he's been in, you know, with Alpha Academy, even American Alpha, you know, back in the day. But yeah, I don't have a whole heck of a lot to talk about in this match other than the Lash Legend segment spot. As I said earlier, phenomenal. I think it was very giving of Otis to do that. You know, and from everything I've ever heard about Otis, sounds like he's like an amazing human being. That doesn't surprise me whatsoever that he'd want to, you know, give something to another talent, especially somebody, you know, that like Lash Legend who could certainly use it quite honestly. And I think personally it did wonders for her tonight. Yeah, we'll see if she can kind of keep that momentum going. But I think that's something people probably, I'm hoping people will talk about for a while. Yeah. Anything on this sixth person tag?
I think that this was about the right balance of fan service and what you'd want in a match in terms of extending stories, angles. You know, Vic Joseph mentioned that Gable, early in the match when he locked on that ankle lock briefly, he said, oh, Gable was able to get Dart attacked to that during the British Rounds match or the Heritage Cup match a couple weeks ago. So you have a call back there, and then Gable ended up actually getting the victory by making Dart tap out by countering the Nova Roller and getting the ankle lock. So I'm assuming that Gable's going to get his rematch for the Heritage Cup, not Saturday, but probably next week, maybe a week after. And you had the thing with Legend and Otis, and they're continuing that. Mensa and Gable, and or not Gable, Mensa and Dupree were kind of the, how do I say, the third wheels for to a certain extent. They kind of were just there. They did their parts, and Maxine, you know, she definitely has a bit more skill to her than her initial character would have led you to believe. But it was more about what you see with Gable and Dar and Legend and Otis. Now, what they do with Legend and Otis, I have no idea what the eventual end game is. But as of right now, it's a little bit of fan service comedy. It keeps Metaphor and Alpha Academy in the same story, in the same sphere going forward. So I don't think they're done with each other, of course. And you know, again, you have the comedic moments with Otis and Lash Legends, whether it was the hip swiveling or the being knocked into Otis's arms again, which we saw a couple weeks ago as well. But you also had the actual bits of in-ring storytelling, like with Dar and Gable, and with Lash and Otis, again, with the body slam. So I think they did a good job here, especially because it was during the middle of the show, I think, and just a good break from what had been happening to have just, you know, fan service and partly extending the stories.
Partly pants service.
Yes, yes. Pants.
Partly pants service. All right, so let's go back to the phone lines. We're going to talk to Reverend Keith. Keith, thank you very much for hitting me up on Twitter. Let me know you're in the queue because I was not doing my job and paying attention to the queue. So thank you for that. How are we doing tonight, Keith?
I'm doing well, and it's so good to be able to talk to you guys after such a lengthy absence. Normally I'm at work and have to watch NXT on DVR, but I was off tonight, so I enjoyed it. I heard a few of the predictions made for the women's breakout and also the men, and I just wanted to chime in that I thought that the go-home show was well-produced. I'm really enamored with the character development of Fallon Henley, Kalani Jordan, and Lash Legend. As you said, you know, Otis was very giving and allowing her to slam him. And all three have really come a long way in the last 6 to 12 months, especially Fallon Henley and Lash Legend. Now, I was originally picking Blair Davenport, but when Nikita Lyons made her return tonight, I'm thinking that she may also cost Blair the match on Saturday, and they may give it to Fallon or Kalani. I realize that it makes more sense to have a heel challenge Lyra, but at the same token, there's already a story there with Fallon because she had addressed Lyra last week on NXT. So do you potentially see Nikita Lyons coming back out? I know she came out and attacked Blair tonight, but do you potentially see Nikita coming back out at Deadline and costing Blair?
Yeah, I know Bruce actually mentioned something about that a little earlier tonight.
Yeah, and I said that, you know, you could go with Fallon to do a face-to-face TV title match with Lyra Valkyria too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not Nikita Lyons' biggest fan in the world. It's like I just don't want to necessarily see her interfere in the match. But they kind of did set up some foreshadowing for that tonight. So it would not surprise me if we did wind up seeing her in the match and potentially costing, you know, potentially costing Davenport the match. It's been so long since she's been out. Was it Davenport that took her out in the first place?
I think in storyline, yeah, they made Davenport be the one. Because she was the one, remember, in the parking lot first, it was like Lyons.
Yeah, that's right.
Someone else.
Yeah.
And then she took out Jade, or not Jade. She took out Gigi Dolan. All, you know, so, yeah. Sol Ruka, yeah.
Yep, that's right. Okay, all coming back to me now.
It was all leading to Davenport's debut review.
I'm lucky I remember what I had for breakfast some days. So, I think it could certainly happen, especially with that, you know, little bit of foreshadowing tonight. I would not be upset if Kalani Jordan took it. I think out of everybody, she could probably use that push the most, being kind of the new one. And I mean, she's from everything we've seen out of her so far. I mean, she's a phenomenal talent. She's definitely got some room to grow, but man, like, her mic work tonight was her mic work was on par with everybody else's tonight. I think there's definitely a star there. I think the more I talk about it, I'm like, I was about to say, I think my money's still on Blair Davenport, but like, the more I talk about it, I think I'm starting to talk myself out of it. Bruce, let me throw it back over to you for that, and then we'll go back to Keith.
So I think if they do have a face win, that it's going to be Fallon Henley and not Kalani Jordan, because I don't think that the person who's going to win, if it's a face, is going to dethrone Lyra Valkyria. And I think with Kalani Jordan right now, you don't want her to be in a title match so early just for her to be the fall person. I think with Henley, it's okay. She's been in these matches before, and not in terms of she's been in the title matches before, but we've seen her in some high-profile matches in the past. Not just the Iron Survivor Challenge, but in contendership matches before. And so it could be a good, not a participation reward or trophy, as Jesse Stratton said earlier today, but it could be a nice little tip of the cap to her development to give her that match. And again, it'll probably most likely be on TV, regardless of if it's Jordan or Henley winning that match. But I do think that it would do more damage to Jordan for her to win the match and then lose to Valkyria than for that same thing to happen to Henley. And I think it's just too early in Jordan's development for her to have that sort of a high-profile defeat. Now, we've seen other people, when they're young, become champions and or have championship matches or become champions when they're young and not have the best sort of build from there or career from there. You know, I mean, Jack Swagger won a title when he was young and didn't really have the best career after that. And then, I just had it too. Who was it? Someone like Randy Orton, I think, had an early title match and he's been just fine. So it really does matter, but I think Kalani Jordan is showing a lot of potential that I think having her lose a title match so early would be detrimental to her. So if a face does win, I think it'll be Henley. I'm more of the mind that if Lyons does make an appearance in the match, it'll be more as a replacement for someone being injured, in storyline, maybe someone gets attacked and, you know, it's Davenport attacks somebody to make it easier for her, and then Lyons is the person that I guess it would be into both of the theories, but that, you know, Davenport takes someone out and then Lyons is the one that replaces them in the middle of the match or something like that. But I'm not that excited to see Nikita Lyons back. I mean, granted, we haven't seen her in the ring yet, but what we saw in the ring before she left didn't leave too many
warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, positive thought. So I think I would still like to see Blair Davenport be the winner. For one, she's lost way too many big matches for someone like her who, I mean, I think what they did with Jay White and not bringing him and pushing him as they should have from the beginning in AEW, I think that's what they've done with Blair Davenport. She should have been, you know, right up there. I was advocating for her to be the one to take the title off Stratton, you know, keep Stratton going as a face and then have Davenport win. But I think she needs some kind of big victory, and this would be that. And even if she doesn't beat Valkyria, at least you get something where she's not in that Dijak territory of, yeah, he's going to lose every big match he's in, a contendership match, whatever it is. She needs something more, because not only does she have a different look and style to her, but she, you know, all the stuff about her personality and outside the ring stuff aside, she's someone who can add a lot to that women's division if they just give her that push.
Yeah, I'd agree. Keith, let me throw it back to you.
Now, I do agree with you, Doc Bruce, on everything you just said. I would not have Kalani Jordan win. It's a little too soon. She has plenty of time to shine, and she has shown brightly. But her time will come. Again, I say if not Blair, it'll be Fallon. I agree with you on the fact that they kind of dropped the ball with Blair, because similar to what they did with Alba Fire, you know, I felt like both of those ladies should have been pushed, especially with all of their history that they had wrestling in other promotions and being stars and champions, both on the independent scene and New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, I felt like Blair should have been a champion a while ago, or at least in contention. But like you said, she's lost a number of matches. So we'll see how it plays out. But if Nikita gets involved, I could see Blair losing. So we'll see. Either way, I think it's going to be a very good match. And I know you were laughing about Nikita, but hey, 8 months ago we were laughing at Lash. So look how far Lash has come. And, you know, so anything can happen. Let's just hope that she's healthy, and whenever she does get back in the ring, she shines brighter than what she did a year ago, because she was thinking up the joint.
Yeah, much more positive than us. Much more positive than us, Keith. But I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's I don't know. I don't want to put anybody down. I really don't. Like, so I hope that she comes in and she does have a much better, her in-ring work is much better than it is. And I mean, there's a lot of people that are drawn to her. I mean, the Nikita chants tonight were massive. So, you know, she definitely does have value.
Not forget, we were saying similar things about Lash Legend about 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Keith just said. Yeah. You know, we were saying the exact same things. And,
the thing about Legend is even during that time, you saw improvements.
We saw
and
slight
potential.
Improvements. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't say the same with Nikita Lyons from what we saw before she was injured. Now, again, it could all depend on how her rehab went and what she did, but I just, like you said, the warm and fuzzies weren't there to begin with.
Yeah, for sure.
Now I want to focus on Trick Williams. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was gonna throw it back to you. So go ahead.
I wanted to focus on Trick Williams right now. He's over. He's been over. I would love to see him give his moment, you know, this Saturday. I know he's embroiled with this feud with Carmelo/Lexus King, but I would still love to see him win this match. Now, as far as I want to swing this out to you guys, as far as this, the rules of this match, does the winner immediately get a title opportunity with the champion, or how does that work?
I believe so. I think that was the. I think that's what it was. Number one contender after Iron Survivor Challenge.
I have no clue. I mean, they could do it next week on NXT. They could do it at Vengeance Day. Who knows? But you definitely get the number one contendership. I just didn't catch it if they said it tonight.
Yeah, I don't remember if
okay,
they said it tonight
what I
or
thought.
Not, but yeah.
That's what I thought. So either way, they'll be number one contender, but they just didn't say when they would get the title opportunity. But I think that NXT has put together a great show for Saturday, and, you know, I think it'll be some stunning developments coming out of this show, and I'm glad to see that Roxanne and Kiana, who's another female superstar who has really developed her character more, even from her entrance, the way they had the helicopters in the background and, like, this star-studded entrance, like she's out of Hollywood, to her walk, to the way she wrestles in the ring, to the way she sells. Kiana James has really come a long way. What are your thoughts, Doc Bruce, on her development?
I mean, the first women's breakout tournament, I said that outside of Roxanne Perez, people that I chose as my, you know, basically the ones to watch were Fallon Henley and Kiana James. And then last year after the Iron Survivor Challenge, I said the standout of the match was Kiana James. So for me, and like I said earlier, I don't think they, with her and Axiom from last year, the two standouts of the match, they definitely, NXT did not capitalize on the momentum that those two created coming out of the match. But in the long run, we've seen that at least Kiana James, not only did she develop her character from what was kind of a one-note, bossy, CEO-type character into something that is more of, not to make the comparison, to say that she is her, but that the character is similar to Sasha Banks when she was in NXT and her first iteration of the boss, right? She's trying to turn that CEO character, that business owner character into more of a boss in the ring, right? And so I'm not surprised that her developed. I'm glad to see it because especially at the time coming out of 2.0, needed to have more women developing and more of that roster reinforced for the future. And it's great to see both her and Henley not only developing, but kind of having similar developmental paths and really being able to. And I think one of the reasons why they're so similar is they were embroiled in not just a tag team, but a feud for so long, right? So to have them together and both just doing what they can, developing, keeping at it, even through the struggles and times when they weren't on TV, I think has to be commended. And that, for me, this is why I like NXT. This is why I like developmental. You get to see these stories, these people, these wrestlers develop and change and evolve. And from 1 year, basically in a 12-month span, we've seen that with Kiana James, Fallon Henley, Tiffany Stratton, and within the last 6 months, Kalani Jordan, right, Blair Davenport. And so I really like what we're seeing and how that development is continuing within NXT, especially the women's division, because for so long, the women's division was what held NXT together. It's why people mm-hmm. came to watch the show. And I want to get back to that point where the women's division is why we're watching the show.
Yep. No, I agree. I mean, I think you know, she was definitely a standout last year in the Iron Survivor Challenge.
She was the standout to me. Yeah. Like I think there was
no
we close. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I vividly remember talking about that. You know, you Kelly and I. You know, she absolutely blew us away because she wasn't somebody that we really were paying that much attention to beforehand. I mean, a little bit, but then I remember after that Iron Survivor Challenge, we were all three of us were just like, "Holy crap!" Like she held that match together basically. So yeah, I think she's come a long way. I forget what the original question was, but
definitely her development.
Yeah, no, okay. So, yeah, no, her development, I think, has been great. You know, like you said, going from that kind of, you know, one-dimensional CEO character kind of into what she's grown into, I think has certainly worked. You know, she's – I think she's definitely somebody to watch out for. You know, whether I don't think she's necessarily going to win as we talked about, but certainly somebody to watch out for. Keith, let me throw it back to you for any follow up or something else.
Yes, I am very happy to see the women in NXT really developing their characters and, you know, getting more TV time just like on the main roster on Raw. 1 week ago yesterday, there were 27 women involved in at least one or more segments on Raw last Monday, not last night. And I know in NXT they have more than that. So it's good that they're starting to incorporate them in the storylines, not just backstage fodder. You know how they used to show them, like when they would have like brawls backstage, you would see a whole bunch of women standing around. They're starting to incorporate them in the storylines, which is a good thing because there's so much potential there, and it's more to come.
Speaking
so
of,
good to see the development.
Izzy Dame tonight,
yes, sir,
with Kiana Jane. Yes, Izzy Dame was there to support Kiana Jane randomly tonight when they're in that. In the trainer's room before they brawled again with Roxanne Perez.
Yes.
So there's another example that you're bringing up.
Yes. You and I are hitting 100, Bruce. We have agreed on every single item tonight. Yes. Well, I'm going to let you guys go. I just wanted to say, hey, I haven't talked to you since, I think, the beginning of the year. But keep up the good work, guys. And I listen to you even when I don't have the opportunity to call in. I'm listening to you. You do a wonderful job. Thanks for taking my call. Enjoy Deadline, and we'll talk soon. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you, Reverend. Appreciate it, man. Definitely appreciate the kind words and the call. Like I said, it's been a while, so definitely good to hear from you. All right. Let's keep rolling here. We may wind up glossing over a few things, but that's okay. Let's talk about – I think we've talked about – the only match we haven't talked about, Lola Vice versus Tatum Paxley. Lola Vice won in 4 minutes and 4 seconds. This match took place earlier in the night. Lola Vice was talking with, I forget who she was talking with backstage.
Lyra Valkyria.
That's right, Lyra Valkyria, when Tatum Paxley kind of came up and started some beef with Lola Vice and wound up in the ring. I honestly gotta say, I kind of like this new direction for Tatum Paxley. I mean, it's a little bit generic, you know, she kind of just wearing black and, you know, black. I don't know if she dyed her hair black, was always black. I can't remember, but it seems darker than before, black lipstick and everything, but I kind of like it. I'm not sure where they're going to go with it per se, but, it's different. You know, for her, like I said, it's a little bit generic in terms of like the look anyway, but, you know, she kind of seems like that, like, I don't know. She kind of just seems like I wasn't going to say Shotzi, but that's definitely a good comparison. Kind of like a Shotzi light.
Like a Shotzi and an Alba Fire or Isla Dawn cross, I guess.
Yeah, you know, something like that. Kind of like trying to go like a, you know, alternative goth punk type of thing, like, which is fine. You know, I mean, I just described the majority of my friends. You know, so it's, like I said, I dig it. And I actually really dug what she did in the ring tonight. You know, she's always been, you know, pretty decent in the ring. She's had, you know, obviously she's progressed quite a bit since her debut. But I thought she was just very crisp and clean tonight. I don't know if you know, kind of portraying this new character's kind of reinvigorated her, if she's kind of wrestling a bit of a different style because of a new character. But she definitely stood out to me tonight. So I definitely want to at least kind of, at least point that out. Lola Vice, yeah, as we said earlier tonight, she has that, that breakout tournament contract that gives her the opportunity to challenge for a title at any point, which is why she was talking to Lyra Valkyria backstage. So I think her going over here makes sense. You want to kind of keep her strong and everything. Tatum Paxley, she's had her share of wins here and there, but I mean, for the most part, she's kind of been treated as kind of like, yeah, I was going to say enhancement talent, but, you know, I didn't want to say enhancement talent, but essentially it's what she's been treated as, enhancement. So now it's kind of nice to see her get that change of character, and maybe we'll kind of, you know, see some more character development, some more wins and things for her, you know, from there. But I think Lola Vice is the right one to go over to keep her strong, and keep her a threat to Lyra Valkyria's title, where she has that that contract. Yeah, Bruce, let me throw it back to you on this final match.
So just a reminder that before Pax goes off TV for a bit, I assume with an injury, she actually had started this character out after she was exiled from Diamond Mine, basically. But then she was off TV for a bit. So it was to the point that when she made her appearance last week, kind of in the background of that segment, Kelly and I both were like, who the hell was that? And then realized it was Tatum Paxley. So while Paxley was crisp, Vice was good, to me, this was the low light of the night. And that's not to say that it was bad. It just didn't live up to the standard of the other segments and matches tonight. To me, the big thing was I understand Paxley's character. It's sort of, in a sense, kind of like Bray Wyatt as well. But it's just too methodical, too slow, too plodding. She needs to speed it up just a little bit, because I felt like, and I think the crowd too felt that at times, this match was just going at a very, very slow pace. So I would say Pax could just pick it up a little bit. Vice, obviously, the winner. I think when she did her black mask at the end, there was a lot of light because of Pax's placement. But they had a bit of tricky camera work where they cut to the camera right behind Paxley as soon as the impact would have landed. So you didn't get to see if there was light or not. But, no, again, I don't think this is a match that they're probably going to put on their highlight reel. Still, I feel like you see the potential. You know, Paxley is someone I've been wanting to see more of for a while, and, of course, Vice, we know. But I think you see here, again, what they can do in the ring. I think Paxley probably won't be more than a lower to mid-card, you know, enhancement talent, and Vice definitely has main card, upper card potential. I think you see that they can serve their purposes well. I just think Paxley needs to increase the speed of her offense a bit more than what she did tonight.
All right. And there's two more things I'm going to throw at you. It's probably more that I'm not thinking of, but I'm gonna, two additional things I'll throw at you, and then if there's anything else you want to throw in, feel free. But the first thing, very small thing, but we saw Joe Gacy in the crowd screaming how much he loves Vic Joseph. I got to say, I really love what's going on with Joe Gacy right now. He's had a couple promo. He's given a couple promos. Kind of vignette style over the past handful. I think it was the last 2 weeks. It was one each week that I thought were great. I mean, one, he was up on the roof, threw the phone off the roof. There was another one, I think he was just backstage or something like that. I forget. But again, just him close up, like, so almost I basically like he's taking a selfie, you know, with his phone. That's kind of the style of the promo. But I mean, it's kind of a little bit more dark and sinister character than he was portraying as part of Schism, as weird as that is to say. At least this one seems like it's almost like he's kind of gone off the deep end, gone crazy a little bit. I see a lot of shades of like ECW Cactus Jack, before he threw away the whole hardcore thing. I see a lot of shades of that there, which Cactus Jack and Mick Foley is like, he's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. So I am totally fine with that. But I think it really works for him. And just this one little cameo he had here tonight where, you know, he's in the crowd screaming to Big Joseph how much he loves him. I thought, hey, if he's not going to be on the show any other way, why not? This kind of shows off this, that he's still kind of going off the deep end and a little crazy and stuff, you know, keeps him in the forefront of your mind. And I don't know where they're going with this, but I like it. So that's the first thing I'm going to throw at you. The second thing is everything going on with Chase University. Chase held an assembly with Chase University here tonight, admitting to, you know, spending all the money, gambling all the money away for Chase University and everything. And dropped a couple bombshells on the university, like anybody that has been, that has enrolled in Chase University after, this whole, all the money being gone will no longer, qualify for financial aid and, you know, things like that, right? Things that if I was still a college student and my college wound up telling me, I'd basically tell them to pound sand, try and get my money back. But instead, everybody here is like, Chase, what can we do? What can we do to help you out? And all of the students want to help him, which I thought was kind of strange. Like he's screwing you over a little bit, and he was not responsible with his money. And now you want to throw him a bake sale and a car wash and help him raise hundreds of thousands of dollars that he spent just. Is a word I'm looking for and I can't think of
gambled.
It. Gambled. He was not irresponsibly. Irresponsibly. Yeah. That was the word I was looking for. He handled the finances irresponsibly and they still want to help him out. I don't know. It's a little weird, but whatever. It's almost like Stockholm syndrome or something. I don't know. Like they just want to help out the person that just screwed them over. But whatever. I'm actually very intrigued to see where this winds up. Because like, it almost feels like it's a scandal where Chase is going to have to like resign from being the one in charge of Chase University and, you know, Duke Hudson maybe take over something, which has been something that we've talked about for a long time. I remember talking, hey, what are they going to name it when Duke takes over? Cause there's already a Duke University, you know? So we'll see. We'll see how this all plays out. But it's a fun angle. I don't think it's everybody's cup of tea. It's probably the weirdest, most comedic angle, I guess, or probably the most suspend your disbelief type angle on the show. But I enjoy it. I like it. I think it's fun. I'm really curious to see where this goes. We also saw Thea Hale become infatuated with one of the boys in the class. I don't know if we know who he is, or I know if Tom was here, he'd know who he is. But no idea who that wrestler was that Thea Hale seemed to be infatuated with. They didn't mention him or give him a name or anything that I remember. But we also saw that. So I'm assuming we're going to see a little bit more. There's going to be a bit more story development around that as well. So on those two segments, or anything else that we didn't cover that you want to cover?
Yeah, so Joe Gacy, I thought he was saying, we love you, Vic, and not I love you, but whatever. He's more interesting
actually,
now than he...
I think it was, we love you, Vic, yeah.
Oh, okay. He's more interesting now than he ever was with Schism. When it comes to Chase U, so the other thing to think about is he said he has to get a loan from a third party, and that third party, and he said he can't really get out of it, is obviously the D'Angelo family with everything that's been going on between these two factions the last couple of weeks. So it seems like he took a loan out from the team that he lost the tag team titles to, which makes me wonder if he threw the tag team title match to get money to help pay off the gambling debts, which is a very, very, very college thing in terms of point saving, yada, yada, yada. So there's that. One thing about this, too, is the acting was just so terrible throughout this entire segment. I'm not even a trained actor. And the other part, too, is with Hale and that one guy, I thought she was glaring at him and zoning out more to think about how she was going to beat the hell out of him rather than being infatuated with him. But maybe that was just me. Two things I want to bring up. Hank and Tank went to the Gallus' bar and challenged them to a match and got them to agree only because that meant that Hank and Tank would leave the bar. So there's that. We also have the men's breakout tournament participants. So,
I did want to bring that up. Yeah.
The first four they showed, and I had to actually go back and figure this out because they happened so quickly and they came right back from break that I missed the first four. The first four were Riley Osborne, Keon Carver, Tavion Heights, and Dion Lennox. I haven't seen or heard of any of them. I don't know what names they had before they came to WWE, so I'm not sure. But then moving on to the final four, there were three people who I've heard of before and one who I didn't. So the one who I haven't heard of before is Trey Bearhill. He is a Native American wrestler. He's channeling that Native American identity in his character. The ones I did recognize, Luca Cristofino, he's playing the lawyer gimmick still, Miles Bourne, and the person that I picked to win a couple weeks ago when we had no idea who was going to be in it, Obafemi. So I'm still sticking with Obafemi as the winner for this breakout tournament. I haven't seen everyone involved, but he was who I picked weeks ago before they announced, or when they, the night they announced it without announcing any competitors. I'm sticking with that. I think he has a lot of potential. I was really hyped when I saw him in his first match or two. I think it was early summer. And so I'm really looking forward to how much he's developed since he's been off of TV for so long. And again, I think he is going to be the winner. And I've been saying this for at least a month now, I think, since that announcement happened. So really excited because Cristofino, he has potential. Bourne, obviously, we know what he can do in the ring, really good technical wrestler. And you get to look at five new wrestlers we haven't seen NXT before, maybe on Level Up, but we don't watch Level Up. So a new batch of talent coming in, really excited to see this. Really love the breakout tournaments, the purpose of them, and what we've seen happen with wrestlers coming out of the breakout tournament. So looking forward to these tournament matches coming up, I'm assuming over the next several weeks, and ending with the finals at Vengeance Day.
All right, I think that is going to bring us to the end of our show, mostly because I got to get to bed, guys. I got to actually drive into the office in the morning. They're making me go in, and I'm not too happy about it, but that's fine. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can check out the things I do at natelindberg.com, including links to this show and the hits and misses columns that I've written and the other stuff I do that are not, it's not Torch-related. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me at B_Lee253 in my report about the Torch. And speaking of work, I might have to miss deadline on Saturday because we have our big annual fundraiser at my place and I had to pick up an overtime shift to help with coverage. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, enjoy deadline, everybody, and see you next week.
All right, guys. We will see you. Well, you know what? Kelly's not here. I'm going to steal his line. We'll see you in 7. Take care.